Good afternoon. You are tuned to Juno Afternoon here for Tuesday, the 20th of December, the year 2016. I'm Jeff Brown. I'll be your host for today. We'll be talking to Liz Perry from Travel Juno about Travel Tuesday. Layla Stevenson will be here from Aware to talk about children's life skills. And we'll talk with Justin Rasmussen about a new product for hunters. That Writer's Almanac, Burnout Music and More today on Juno Afternoon. The forecast for tonight, showers, low temperatures around 37 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, more showers with high temperatures near 37 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday night, rain and snow showers, all snow after midnight. Thursday, snow likely.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Canadian government says it's determined to raise the standards of housing on reserves. This comes as a chief in Ontario criticized the government after a fire killed a family of five. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
The two-story home on the Oneida Nation of the Thames, a reserve near London in southwestern Ontario, caught fire and burned quickly, killing four young children and their father. The chief of the reserve, Randall Phillips, described the structure as basically kindling. And Phillips said the government had already rejected a plea for money to upgrade 50 homes on his reserve.
The impact here stretches right across our family lines here in the community. So there's not too many people that are going to go unscathed by this tragic event. This loss is tremendous in a tight-knit community such as ours, and we're only starting to understand what has happened.
The Indigenous Affairs Minister, Carolyn Bennett, says the government is committed to ensuring the safety of First Nations communities and acknowledges that there is a wide-reaching need for improved infrastructure such as housing, community centers, and fire protection services. She says she doesn't know how many First Nations people die in fires on reserves. Collection of that kind of data was stopped 6 years ago. She says her department would work on new options to address the gaps in fire data on reserves. Earlier this year, another fire, this one in the remote northern Ontario reserve of Pikangikum, left 9 people dead. Indigenous leaders blame some of the fires on what they describe as third world living conditions on reserves. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The discovery of two severely malnourished and abused girls on the Pine Ridge Reservation last month has resulted in concern, anger, and action from the local community. As Jim Kent reports, tribal members and others in the surrounding area came together in Rapid City, South Dakota recently with one goal in mind, ensuring that it doesn't happen again.
The 2 and 3-year-old girls were found by police officers responding to a reported assault at a home on the Pine Ridge Reservation. The children were hidden under a pile of blankets on the floor and wearing only diapers. A pediatrician who examined the girls compared their condition to prisoners of World War II concentration camps. Lakota tribal member Patty Puyer says her reaction to the subsequent news story was immediate.
It just broke my heart, and I think it did a lot of other people too. I couldn't get it off of my mind, and I decided enough is enough. I can try to organize a meeting to try to get a coalition of different entities together so we can maybe streamline help for children.
Among those in attendance was Donna Lamont, a supervisor for the Oglala Sioux Housing Authority on Pine Ridge. The home where the girls were found falls under the tribe's jurisdiction. Lamont says one key to preventing such a tragedy is to reinstate a practice the Housing Authority used to have with the tribe's Public Safety Department.
Whatever they encountered out there, we went along with them and stuff, and we kind of lost that for a while. I don't know why, but we did.
Lamont says that as that partnership is being reinstated, she hopes other agencies on the reservation that deal with child welfare will communicate with Oglala Sioux Housing and each other as well. A committee has been established that will regularly meet with authorities to work toward eradicating child abuse on the Pine Ridge Reservation and in the surrounding areas. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
President Obama has signed a bill which includes a provision to return the Ancient One, also known as Kennewick Man, to tribes. Tribes have long sought the return of the remains discovered 20 years ago in Washington. A group of tribes in the Northwest has been in the legal battle to get the remains returned home. Tribes would like to rebury the remains in early 2017. The provision requires the remains to be returned to tribes from federal hands within 90 days. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com. Support by Northern Arizona University, a university committed to serving Native American students, offering opportunity in every direction, in Flagstaff, at community colleges around the state, and online. Learn more at nau.edu. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into Juneau Afternoon. Our first guest is Liz Perry from Travel Juneau. That's a new name for the Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau. Liz, thank you for coming to the studio with us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
So why the change name?
It is one of the trends that we're noticing in the what we call the destination management organization industry. And those are organizations, much like the Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau, who are charged with promoting a destination to visitors and to get people into those destinations. And as you realize, Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau is quite a mouthful to say. And so is JCVB, which was our little acronym that we used. A lot of organizations are going to, say, visit Seattle, visit Anchorage, and explore Fairbanks. And indeed, Travel Juneau has been part of our name in terms of our website and in terms of the link for our email addresses for a number of years. So we decided that the time was right for us to move to that moniker. It's much easier to say, and we think it'll serve us well.
And about how many people travel to Juneau each year?
We're seeing about a million visitors, million to 100,000 plus visitors a year. Of course, we had our millionth cruise visitor this year as well. And anecdotally, we get about an additional 10 to 12% on top of those cruise visitors who visit Juneau independently. They come in with families. They spend several days, take advantage of everything that Juneau has to offer. We have additional visitors, too, that come in for meetings and conventions. And that meeting and convention revenue is really, really important for the city.
And this white stuff that's falling from the sky.
We love it. We partner pretty closely with Eagle Crest, and one of our charges this year and in upcoming years will be really to push Juneau out as a year-round destination. So wrapping Eagle Crest up into those promotions and making visitors aware of everything there is to do in Juneau in the wintertime, taking advantage of the art scene, the theater scene, music, all of our great food, and, of course, skiing up at Eagle Crest, taking advantage of everything that makes Juneau fun to be here in the wintertime.
About how many conventions come to Juneau, or gatherings of people? Is there a big blown full-out conventions?
Well, we run anywhere between about 15 to 20 different meetings a year just through Travel Juneau, and we're always trying to increase the number of meeting planners who come to us first to help get their meeting launched. There are, I would say, another 8 to 10 meetings at least that come through, for example, at Centennial Hall that we may or may not be aware of. But right around 20 or so meetings come through Travel Juneau, and planners will ask us for various kinds of assistance. So we can provide all kinds of services, such as getting hotel bids. We can help planners with getting catering bids, referring them to other services that they may need. For example, if they need additional sound or tech service, we can make those referrals. And if planners are planning their meetings for the very first time, this is their first meeting, we can actually sit down with them and kind of give them a roadmap on getting that meeting planned, things that they need to do first, things that they need to watch out for, and how to budget.
Are these groups coming to Juneau from out of state or from are they pretty much local in-state?
There, it's a variety. We historically have seen a lot of in-state groups come to Juneau to meet. With the travel restrictions with the state of Alaska, we have seen a decline in in-state groups that are associated especially with state government. So one of the things we are doing is targeting associations that are maybe located in the Pacific Northwest or who typically can meet in the Pacific Northwest. And we target meeting planners and organizations who have meetings of approximately 450 people or fewer. That is a pretty good sweet spot for us because we can get people housed downtown, take advantage of Centennial Hall and the other meeting spaces that we have available in Juneau.
About how many people work for Travel Juneau?
We have 7 full-time staff and 2 part-time staff. And so practically every person are their own department. We're divided up into 5 different areas that we work in. We have a visitor services department. They're charged with making sure that our visitors have a great experience when they arrive here, making sure that they have a travel guide and other information to help plan their trip to Juneau or answer questions once they get here. They also train the 140-person volunteer corps that we have. Juneau has the largest volunteer corps of any destination marketing organization in the United States. So most of those volunteers are staffing our sites down at the cruise ship terminal visitor center and at the kiosk that's located next to the library. We also have a membership services department, which that's pretty obvious what that is, our convention sales department, which sells to meeting planners, again, to get meetings and conventions into Juneau, and a destination management department and marketing department. We do a lot of outreach to keep Juneau top of mind among people who are trying to make travel plans and make those decisions, and that's an extremely important marketing function that we do.
What kind of things are the deal makers, the things that people want to get, the last thing you say, then they say yes?
We can provide some incentives to meeting planners. One is if they have meetings of particular sizes, for example, if they come in and they've got maybe 200 room nights associated with their meeting and they need to rent out Centennial Hall, we're in a position to provide them a discount on Centennial Hall. So the more room nights that are in play here, the more incentives we can provide. Our Bring It Home program is designed specifically for Juneau residents to encourage them to work with us to bring their association and professional society meetings to Juneau. And one of the things we have hanging out for them is not only all of our planning services, but if we are successful in landing that meeting, they can be registered for a drawing for Alaska Airlines tickets anywhere Alaska Airlines flies. One of the things I wanted to let listeners know is that they can get some contact information by just taking a look at their coffee sleeves over the next couple of 3 weeks. We have delivered coffee sleeves to almost every coffee purveyor here in town, and it's got Kirk Stagg's contact information. Kirk is our convention sales manager, and he is really anxious to help people get that meeting into Juneau, and we have a whole program lined out to help them do that.
Sounds cool or hot, I should say.
We hope it's a hot ticket.
Any other things going on in the near future?
Not in the near term. We're kind of settling in a little bit for the holidays, although we all have big projects kind of on our plates right now. We have a new website that's going to be rolling out in March, and so we're preparing new content and pulling pieces together for that. Also, we just had our annual meeting, and at that annual meeting, we announced new board members, Liz Barlow, who's with the Wings Airways Taku Glacier Lodge, and Katie Harms, who's with Macaulay Salmon Hatchery, have joined the board. And we have reelected our executive committee, which is John McConaughey of Cycle Alaska. Jan Anderson is the co-chair. She is with Alaska Zipline Adventures. Carl Ramseth is our treasurer. Carl's with Alaska Seaplanes. And Jill Ramiel is with Silver Bow Inn, and she is our secretary.
What conventions are you due to come into town soonest?
We are looking forward to hosting the Arctic Council in March. They're bringing a senior Arctic officials meeting here to Juneau. They have met in other places in Alaska, but we're very excited because this is an international meeting of at least 250 attendees representing several Arctic countries, and they will be looking at climate change, fisheries, all of those pieces. That will happen in March. In June, we will host the Western Association of State Highway Transportation Officials. We won that meeting, and we are very excited to have them in June and get them, get all those folks out enjoying all of the Juneau excursions and the scenery that we have to offer.
And if you'd like to, just invite them to be guests on a Juneau afternoon sometime if they're traveling through.
Oh, thanks. I will do that.
Ms. Perry, anything you'd like to mention that we might have forgotten to ask?
No. If the listeners have a meeting that they would like to talk with us about, I would invite them to talk to Kirk Stagg at 586-1749, or they can email to kirk.stagg, that's S-T-A-G-G, at traveljuneau.com, and we'll get that rolling.
Ms., thank you very much.
Thank you.
When I woke up on Saturday morning, I didn't want to open my eyes. I didn't want to leave my pillow. I didn't need to see a sunny sky. But I woke up on Saturday morning and dragged a comb across my back. And when I looked up at the ceiling, I saw my life go by in every crack. So I walked down the stairs in my building, and I could smell the smoke through the door, and I could hear the voices of angels, and I had never heard these things before. It's an amazing world we're living in. It's an amazing world we are living in. It's an amazing world we're living in. And if you want, I'll take you with me. Sidewalks glistening like there were diamonds underneath my feet. The way the leaves were dancing was charming. The way the sunshine was working through. And every traffic light was singing. And pretty soon I started singing too. It's an amazing world we're living in. It's an amazing world we are living in. It's an amazing world we're living in.
About 18 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into Juneau Afternoon. Our next guest is Leila Stevenson from WARE, here to talk about children's programs. Leila, thank you very much for being on the station.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, children's programs, you must have a lot going on.
Yeah, WARE has some amazing children's programs that we offer. We have weekly life skills groups on Tuesday from 6 to 7:30, and then we also have weekly creative play groups on Wednesday from 6 to 7:30.
When you talk about life skills, what are you talking about?
So our life skills group focuses on helping kids to increase coping skills, increase communication, and decision-making skills. We have different topics that we cycle around, including feelings, expression, safety planning, problem-solving, healthy choices, self-esteem. And with those topics, we present the topics through games, different activities, expression through art. So although the kids are learning really important skills, they're doing it having a lot of fun.
What kids are invited? Do they have to be residents at the WARE shelter?
No, our children's groups are open to anyone in the Juneau community who has children ages 5 and up. 5 to 12 is kind of probably the best age range for our children's groups right now. And it's really any kids who could use just a little bit of extra support and some time to kind of increase their skills.
And you've got the life skills class going on tonight.
Yes, we do life skills class on Tuesdays. Right now we're running a Kids Club Moms Empowerment Program on Tuesdays, which is a closed group. We've got 6 more weeks of that, and then our group will open back up. And then in March, we'll have another Kids Club Moms Empowerment Program.
Tell me more about the program.
Yeah, so the Kids Club Moms Empowerment Program is really neat. It offers the opportunity for moms to participate in a group that provides parenting support and self-care. And then their children also participate in a group that cycles around 10 topics. And so it's skill building for both mom and kids. And we do the topics with a lot of fun. And so that's a closed group. We try to get moms and kids participating, and that runs for 10 weeks. So our next dates are March 28th through May 30th. And then so while we offer the Kids Club Moms Empowerment, that's kind of in place of our regular scheduled Tuesday life skills group. But we will still always have our creative play group on Wednesdays.
About how many kids take advantage of your programs?
Right now we have about 12 kids who regularly come to one or the other group. And then we have a lot of kids participating in counseling and other services at AWARE. We also will be offering Parenting the Love and Logic Way again in February. And that's an amazing parenting class that's great for anyone who is working with kids or parenting kids. And we do offer that class free of charge, which is an amazing service to the community.
Are you the only facilitator there?
I'm the only facilitator of Parenting the Love and Logic Way, but we do have other children's advocates and interns who offer that help with the life skills group, KCMEP, and our creative play group.
The Love and Logic Way, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, Parenting with the Love and Logic Way is a great parenting class, and it's also really fun. It takes a look at how we can parent in a way that will stop back-talking, stop arguing and begging, and most importantly, we'll teach our kids how to make decisions and how to learn from their mistakes. With love and logic, we really want kids to make a lot of little mistakes when they're young so that when they're older, they're not making big life-altering mistakes. They learn that their actions have consequences. And as parents, we're responsible for teaching kids that all of our actions have consequences, and we can help kids learn that by setting enforceable limits, being calm in our interactions with children, and responding to kids in a loving way and a very logical way with the things that they do and the way that we parent.
Sounds fascinating.
It is. It's a great class, and it's a lot of fun.
If you need more information, how can they contact you?
They can call me at AWARE, 586-6623. I can also be emailed at leelas@awareak.org.
Lila, is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I just want to stress that our groups are open to anyone in the community. So if you're a parent, a teacher, a grandparent, and you're interested in your kids attending group and you're interested in any of the groups that we offer, please give us a call. We're really excited to get some additional kids participating in our program.
Lily Stevenson, thank you for coming by today.
Thank you so much.
Gray skies are gonna clear up. Put on a happy face. The clouds and cheer up. Put on a happy face. Take off the grinchy face of grumpiness. It's not your style. You look so good that you'll be glad you decided to smile. Look out a pleasant outlook. Stick out that silly chin. Wipe off that full of doubt look. Slap on a happy grin and spread sunshine all over the place and put on a happy face.
Hey, what's What's the matter? Why so glum, Sean? Oh, come on, it can't be that bad. Come on, let me see that pretty smile. Yeah, that's better. I don't know about you, but I feel better now. Come on, sing with me one time. Great guys are gonna clear up.
Put on a happy face.
Brush off those clouds. Come on, cheer up.
Put on a happy face.
Banana splits and licorice, and you'll feel just fine. I knew a kid so gloomy,
she'd never laugh or sing.
She wouldn't listen to me.
Now she's a mean old thing.
So spread sunshine all over the place, and put on a happy face.
The Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's December the 20th, 2016. It's the birthday of the physicist Robert Van de Graaff, born in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, 1901, known for the generator, the Van de Graaff generator, which very popular in science classrooms, a hollow metal globe on a hollow pole inside which a pair of pulleys drives a belt of silk over a pointed metal comb. You crank up the Van de Graaff generator, and a student touches one while it's running, and the static charge lifts your hair into a halo around your head. It was on this day in 1985, President Reagan signed a bill establishing an official poet laureate for the United States. Billy Collins, Louise Glick, Charles Simic, Donald Hall have all served. Juan Felipe Herrera is the current poet laureate. It was on this day, 1946, that It's a Wonderful Life was first shown New York City at the Globe Theater. James Stewart as George Bailey, the businessman, feeling unfulfilled, frustrated, decides to commit suicide, but an angel intercedes. Reviews of the film were mixed. It was financially a flop. It wasn't until years later, during the 1970s, the film began showing on television around Christmas time, quickly became a family favorite, now considered a Hollywood classic. It's the birthday of the science fiction fantasy writer Nalo Hopkinson, born in Jamaica, 1960. Author of Sister Mine, Midnight Robber, and many other novels. It's the birthday of the poet-novelist Sandra Cisneros, born in Chicago, 1954, author of the coming-of-age novel The House on Mango Street, widely read in middle schools and high schools around the country. She was the third child in a family of seven children, spent most of her childhood moving back and forth between Chicago and Mexico City, and she drew on her own background to tell the story of Esperanza, a Latina girl growing up in a rundown Chicago neighborhood who dreams of living in a real house. Here's a poem for today by Patricia Hooper, At the Terminal. Remember how we took those separate flights, imagining the worst, our plane gone down, our children young, alone. I'd leave an hour before you, wait to meet you at your gate, or you'd go first, arrive and rent a car, then meet me at the exit. In between blue emptiness, our lives suspended where clouds stacked themselves between us, you on earth and I already gone. Or else I'd stand on solid ground and watch you disappear, my heart, my shining bird, a streak of light, a flash of wing, then nothing. only one of us, one at a time. And whether I turned back to the concourse or pulled down the shade over the brilliant window belted in above the tilting tarmac, I rehearsed this hour ever nearer when the planet would hold one or the other, and you'd watch, or I, the earth receding, or look up into the arc of absence, blinding space. At the terminal, a poem by Patricia Hooper from her collection Separate Flights, published by University of Tampa Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Association of Writers and Writing Programs, bringing their annual conference to Washington, D.C. this February. More at awpwriter.org. And by Lumosity, with a 10-minute fit test to calculate baseline scores and training programs with 50 challenging brain games. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for programming comes from Alaska Seaplanes, providing scheduled service to 11 communities from Juneau. Reservations available at flyalaskaseaplanes.com or 789-3331. Alaska Seaplanes, flying at a higher standard.
It's 31 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into Juneau Afternoon. Our next guest in the studio is Justin Rasmussen. He's invented a rifle harness. Justin, thank you for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
So this is a rifle harness, and what's it designed to do?
Yeah, so normally out and about in the bear country, you want to have your rifle in your hand so it's immediately accessible. But sometimes there's, you know, you need both hands to do other tasks. So we now have a way to carry it on your chest where it's still accessible, but be hands-free for a little bit.
It seems like an idea that just has to happen.
Yeah. A friend of mine, Brian Weed, he does a lot of outdoor adventuring here. With Juneau Hidden History and a couple other things. And he just asked me if I could make a way to carry his rifle on his chest when he needed his hands, and we did a little tinkering and came up with this idea.
Has it been done before?
Not that I found, no. Completely new.
What kind of materials did you use?
I use some mil-spec nylon for the strapping and then a material called Kydex, which is a thermoformed plastic heated up and formed around the gun itself and do a little more work in and screws and stuff. Very rugged and outdoor friendly. It's no leather to hold moisture and just does well for our southeast weather.
How much refining did you have to do?
Quite a bit. There were several tries that didn't work very well. We're on try three or four, and it works decently. There's still a couple more tweaks we want to do. Lots of testing, lots of experimenting. Not going to release it until it's perfect, but it's definitely getting there.
What kind of marketing plan do you have?
Word of mouth right now, and my website will be available soon, and that's going to be Razco Gear at RAZCOgear.com. I do have a Facebook presence. It's under Razco Gear as well. Basically, the great people of Juneau have just spread the word, and it's growing, so very thankful for that.
About how many have you made already?
The rifle carriers, there's only one in existence. I do make some other holsters and other products, Leatherman carriers and chest holsters for fishing and backpacking and hunting, stuff like that. I can't even count how many I've made.
It's an obvious fit for Alaska, but what about markets in the lower 48?
That's in the works. definitely not my strong suit in marketing, but we're working on that as well.
How do people contact you if they want some?
You can email me at razcogear@gmail.com. You can find me on Facebook at the Razco Gear. Message me there. And then when my website is done in the next couple, 3 weeks, you'll be able to email me through the website as well.
Well, good luck with your project, Justin.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
The chest holster is a big seller, and just having your gun, if you need it, where it's not on your backpack, maybe set aside or out of reach, you know, we have a couple bear mullings every year, and I just would like to urge people to have their gun where they can get to it.
So tell me again, you designed it so it leave you access to your gun without having your hands tied up and carrying other gear.
The rifle carrier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a harness. It's got three straps, and it just clicks in from the top, and you can use hands free. There's no buckles or anything to do. And then as soon as you need it, you just pull it out, and you're ready to go. And then you don't have a sling on, which a lot of people don't like carrying slings because it snags on the brush and gets caught up on things. So that's another benefit as well. And it adds a little bit of safety factor too, when the gun is in the rig, the trigger's covered, so that's an added bonus for safety as well.
How much research did you do before you made your first one?
The rifle carrier, a lot. I did spend a lot of time in the military and had the experience there, and then just looking around at different products and different ways and how to do it, and it wasn't a commercially available thing, so we did some thinking and came up with this.
So you mentioned the rifle carrier. How many different models or styles do you have?
Right now it's going to be for the Marlin, the real popular Marlin 4570s. All the 336 is on the same frame, so that covers a couple more calibers. And then once we get that perfect, the prototype done, we'll expand to mostly lever guns and shotguns. And then once those get going real well, I'll take a look at doing bolt actions and other things like that.
Is this the kind of plan that you're looking for investors?
Maybe eventually. I also have another job that, kind of funds this as well. And I'm kind of enjoying building it on my own, but I might look for investors later on down the road, yeah.
I'm going to ask you for their website one more time.
Yeah, it's going to be Razco Gear, RAZCO Gear.com.
All right. Thank you, Justin.
Thanks, Jeff.
This is Bird Note. In the Amazon, heat and humidity virtually smother you. Although a cacophony of bird calls surrounds you, it's hard to see even a single bird. Then one call, emanating from a cathedral of vegetation, catches your ear. Could this piercing and cheerful yelp be the same sound you remember from a Saturday morning in your childhood? It's the call of a toucan, the tropical icon and inspiration for Toucan Sam, that colorful spokesbird for Fruit Loops cereal. Characterized by massive yet surprisingly light bills, the 41 species in the toucan family are found only in Central and South America. The species we are hearing now is a Cuvier's toucan. It has a jet black body and a spotless white bib. Its black bill, nearly as long as its body, is rimmed with vivid yellow and baby blue. That the toucan hops through the trees as it forages for fruit adds to its comical demeanor. But don't expect this bird to lead you to a bounty of rainbow-colored sugar puffs with its nose. Toucans can't smell. So why does Toucan Sam, or any other toucan, have such a large bill? Turns out that they can conserve heat or release it with those giant beaks. Learn more on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
Tonight's next speaker is Nico Buss. Nico Buss is by now considered a sourdough, but when he moved here from the Netherlands in 1975, he was a real chuchaco. Born into a family of construction workers, Nico was the only one of five siblings who ended up in a white-collar job. He was lured to Juneau from the bustling European city, The Hague, by his future wife, Susan, herself a chuchaco, a Los Angeles transplant who was hired by the U.S. Forest Service the first year they hired women on field crews. He has since built a wilderness cabin and peed in the Yukon River. Two undisputed criteria in becoming a sourdough. An avid soccer player, Nico helped start the Juno Soccer Club and coached many a youth soccer player. Now retired after 30-plus year career with the state, he drives tour buses in the summer. Yes, Nico Bus, the bus driver. And travels frequently in the fall and spring to explore America's many beautiful national parks and historical places. Please welcome to the stage Mr. Nico Bus.
Well, good evening. My name is Nico, and I was at Chichaco in 1976. Before that, I had lived in Holland, minding my business, like Dutch people do. I was tending to the tulip fields, milking the cows, getting all the cheeses that I wanted, drinking my Heineken, and going after that little boy, giving him a break, putting my finger in the dike. And then, if I wasn't bicycling, I would try to ice skate on the canals next to the windmills. I had a great time until I got a little note from my cousin in America. He says, I have this college friend. She's coming to Holland. Could you show her around? Well, I'm really glad he did that because this young lady was really fantastic, very adventurous, full of humor, and we hit it off right away. So I showed her around Europe. She asked me to come to Juneau, Alaska. I go, where is that? So I came here, fell in love with this area. She came back to Holland one more time. And I decided I need to figure out if this relationship is going to work. So I quit my real job, which was an accountant for a CPA firm, and I moved to Juneau, Alaska. Now, mind you, I was on a tourist visa, which means you're not allowed to work for pay. So I had a little savings account, and I tried to stretch that savings as much as I could. Now, one thing you need to do when you get to Juneau is make sure that you have cheap housing, because it's really, really expensive. So the way I did that, I negotiated with this church to become their janitor. And in trade, I lived in the loft at the end of this building for 1 year. So, cheap. I'm Dutch. Okay. So, the other thing, in order to stretch my savings further, I decided in Europe, the way they teach young people to do a skill, they do an apprentice program. So I thought I'd use that model and tell people in Juneau that if they wanted a young, energetic, foolish person working for almost nothing, they could either take me on a fishing trip, buy me a meal, or give me a stipend to get gas or whatever. So word got out, and I got busy. Some of the things I ended up doing, I volunteered, for instance, in Tenneke, which I had heard was going to build a bridge. So I thought it was great. I went to Tenneke and built a bridge over the Indian River, sat in the hot tub, drank beer. It was a great thing. But one of the things I really liked to do was fall trees, because that was real Alaskan, right? Now, that opportunity was offered to me when an elderly couple called and inquired if I could fall a hazardous tree in their yard. I didn't know what a hazardous tree meant, but I said, you know, do you know I don't really have any experience, but if you want to try me, I'll be happy to do that. Provided that you bring me the chainsaw, because I don't own one. So they asked me to come out to their home, which was on the beach past Ock Bay. Beautiful place, right on the beach, really expensive home. So here I understood why it's called a hazardous tree. So the tree is leaning towards the house, really expensive house, on one side, and on the other side, it's leaning towards the power lines. So being young and foolish, I said, okay, I'll do it. And so the owner shows me how to operate the chainsaw. And he leaves for work. So I'm standing there, scratching my head, going, what did I get myself into? Well, being an accountant, you know, you use your brain, right? So I did the math. I stepped out the length of the tree in its shadow, and I figured the tree was twice as long as the distance between the tree and the house. So I could not follow it that direction or to the power line. The only option I had was to cut the tree in half. Wow, good plan of attack. How do you do that? Well, I looked for a ladder, put the ladder against the tree, and hit the midway. I go, great. So now, how do I cut the tree? I have only two hands, so you need to pull the trigger and push pressure on it. And just recently, I bought a chainsaw, and it has a manual. And in the manual, there's little diagrams. And one of the diagrams is, never put a ladder against a tree and use a chainsaw. Well, I just did that. I climbed the tree, and then I thought, it would really be handy to have one of those harnesses you see in the logging days where these guys hang back, and, you know, they can use two hands. But I figured, I'm young and strong. I use one hand. Use the chainsaw, hang on to the tree or the ladder. So I just did that. And as I was trying to make the undercut, the chainsaw is right in front of my face. No goggles, no earmuffs, and it's buzzing right in front of my eyes. Well, chips flying everywhere. I made the undercut, and then I go, well, I hope I did the math right. I never thought about the liability, because in Holland they don't sue anybody, but here you can get in big trouble if you damage somebody's property, right? I knew I couldn't fall to the power lines because that would alarm all the neighbors. They lose their electricity. So I start pushing the tree when I was just about to go, and I pushed and pushed and pushed, and it fell right towards the house. Oh, no, I hope I did my math right. Climbed down the tree, walked to the front door, and I did my math right. The good accountant in me, the tree was that far from the front door. I quickly limped all the branches, bucked up the top of the tree, cut the bottom, made all nice rounds, put it in this gentleman's woodshed, cleaned it up, and when he came home, he was impressed. Driveway was clean, tree was gone, pile of branches one side, woodshed full. And he paid me a really nice compliment. He said, not bad for Chichaco. So, before the end of my tourist visa, we decided to get married. We've been married for 40 years. We have a wonderful family in Juneau. Our son and his wife, Leon and Torin, live in Juneau. Alita lives here, and I'm proud to be a Juneauite. Thank you for listening to my Chichaco story.
That was Nico Bass III as part of the September Mud Rooms.
The New Year's Eve Barn Dance is always a fun and relaxed way to close out the year with friends and neighbors. The Taku Gales provide this year's live music, and Tom Paul and Jim Grandma will teach and call modern and classic contra and square dances. As always, you don't need experience or a partner. Join us New Year's Eve at St. Anne's Parish Hall downtown from 7:30 to 11 for a low-cost, high-fun evening out. Discounts for those 25 and under and free for AmeriCorps and JVs. Sponsored by Juneau Folk Dancers with help from KRNN. It's the New Year's Eve Barn Dance.
Fiddler on the Roof on Christmas? The Goldtown Nickelodeon, Juno's Unitarian Universalist, and Congregation Sukkot Shalom are pleased to announce Juno's first Fiddler on the Roof screening and sing-along on Christmas Day. Show starts at 4 p.m. at the Goldtown Nick, and all proceeds go to the ACLU. For more information or to buy tickets, visit goldtownnick.com.
Holiday season, you'll hear a variety of programs on public media, from Christmas to Kwanzaa, symphonies to jazz, traditional tunes to time-tested favorites. You're bound to find something to warm your spirits and more. And to make sure you don't miss your favorite helping of radio, we've prepared an online listing of what you'll find. Just point your browser to ktoo.org and follow the links. From all of us at the stations, happy holidays, and may you have a happy start to your new year.
This New Year's Eve, head to the Jack when Juno Jazz and Classics and the Moss Family proudly present Wingin' the New Year. Put on your dancing shoes and party the night away to the sounds of the Juno Big Band with a special appearance by the Last Chance Dance Band. Enjoy complimentary hors d'oeuvres, chocolate fountain, and a champagne toast at midnight. Tickets and more at jazzandclassics.org, the Jack, Hearthside Books, and at the door. Get ready to swing in the New Year, a benefit for the 2017 Juno Jazz and Classics Festival.
Thank you.
before the hour you are tuned into June afternoon. Tomorrow on the show, we'll find out about Christmas Day screening and Fiddler on the Roof. And Matt Leonard and Jeff O'Connell will be here to talk about Eagle Crest and learn about babysitting classes at Bartlett Memorial Hospital. Weather forecast for tonight, showers, low temperatures around 37 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, more showers and high temperatures near 38 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday night, rain and snow showers, becoming all snow after midnight with low temperatures around 31 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, snow showers likely with high temperatures near 32.
Join me, Kate, for emerging artists and the latest from the greats every Tuesday on Tideline, 5 to 7 on 102.7 KRNN. You'll hear a mix of music that's the perfect way to start your evening. Tuesday Tidelines with Kate, 5 to 7 on KRNN 102.7 FM.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.